Electricity production will be affected, but not the amount of water farms and cities get. That's because releases downstream from Hoover Dam are not yet being reduced. The Bureau says water shortages there could begin as soon as 2015. Nearly 40 million people in seven states and Mexico depend on Colorado River water. The current 14-year drought is the worst since the government began keeping records more than a century ago. Ted Robbins, NPR News, Las Vegas.
Bert Lance has died after a recent bout with health problems. Lance was a banker in Georgia before serving as budget director for then-President Jimmy Carter, who was elected in 1976. He left in 1977 amid a high-profile investigation of the bank's lending. I'm Dave Mattingly.
Support for NPR comes from Allstate, committed to helping people live the good life every day. Allstate, good hands for the good life at allstate.com/good.
WILL programming is made possible by Sinfonia de Camera, introducing their 30th season with a gala celebration on Sunday, September 15th at 6 p.m. in the Krannert Center lobby. The evening will feature music, dancing, dinner, and a live auction. More information is available at the Sinfonia office at 244-4350.
Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and this is our monthly program devoted to answering your questions on personal finance. Our regular financial expert, Kevin Wasby, isn't able to be with us today, but we do have Kathy Sweetler with us. She's an educator in what they used to call consumer economics, the class I wish I had taken more seriously in high school, but you deal with that for the University of Illinois Extension. And, of course, she can answer your questions on personal finance and consumer issues. And, Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Let me get the phone numbers and email addresses out first. If you have some questions about personal finance, give us a call. The number is toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk, that's WILL-talk at illinois.edu. And we also welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And we were talking about, opening to the show, about credit and the problems that state universities are now having, really because of the state's problems and because of the pension problems, and how Moody's was downgrading the credit ratings for most of the state universities in Illinois. And I was looking at the thing, you know, it's a little murky unless you're investing in bonds, I suspect. About exactly what's going down. For instance, the Auxiliary Facility System Revenue Bond has been downgraded from AA3 to AA3 from AA2.
Correct.
Do you know what that means?
Well, I think it does say that, when people are looking at who they want to loan money to, whether it's a company or a person, then they're really trying to think about what is the risk of loaning this money? What is the likelihood that I'm going to get paid back? And these ratings reflect that.
Now, most of us as individuals do not issue bonds.
Luckily, we don't have to deal with that.
I've heard there are individuals who do, but we are probably not among them. But unless we're really off the grid, we all have credit ratings, and those affect our ability to get credit. And that's, I guess, because someone is looking at these ratings and thinking, shall I give this person a loan? Shall I grant this person a mortgage? Does this person get our bank's credit card? That sort of thing?
That's correct. And in fact, the way our credit system works in this country with our credit bureaus, it can actually even go beyond loans, but to other business type situations, such as what would be my insurance rates, or even can I rent an apartment? So it can affect more than just your actually getting a credit card or getting a loan.
Even renting an apartment.
It can be a situation, yes, where somebody would want to check your credit history before making a decision whether to rent to you or not.
And maybe they would still say yes, but it might affect the how much you have to put down in advance as the deposit?
Yes. So, for example, a very concrete example of this is, let's say that you're turning on utilities in a home or when you're renting, your credit rating can affect how much deposit you either have to put down at all or how much you have to put down. Because if we think about it, we use electricity or gas for heating, and then we pay for our use afterwards. So even though it's only a loan for a month, it is a loan. And so this is another form of credit that we just don't really think about quite that way, but it is credit.
Okay. How do we, and, you know, I'm assuming most people out there have looked, but maybe they haven't. What's the easiest way to check out your credit rating? I have seen commercials. I remember a few from a few years ago, which imagined really humiliating little extra jobs you might have to take if you didn't take care of your credit rating. And these were for-profit companies which offered to essentially grant give you access to your credit rating. Do you need those companies?
No. Luckily, the federal government has recognized that the credit bureaus are having quite an impact on people's lives. So even though the credit bureaus are private companies, they have required that the three main credit bureaus give access to everybody their own personal credit report for free once a year. And you can get that at annualcreditreport.com. That's really the only place you want to go for your credit report, annualcreditreport.com.
Annualcreditreport.com. And we'll try to get a link to that put on the page for today's program. When you hit over there, what are you going to see, and how easy is it to get your credit report?
It's relatively easy, really, and I do believe that doing it online is secure. You can also phone or do it in writing, but really online, I think, is the simplest way.
Are they going to ask for, like, your Social Security number?
They are going to ask you for ways to identify yourselves, including your Social Security number, because that is how the credit bureau files are all synced up, is with your Social Security number. It's secure to put it in. They're also going to ask you some other kinds of questions, like, what type of car did you get a loan on, or where did you last live, in the last years? And you're going to have to remember these kinds of things. They're trying to think of questions that you would know that other people wouldn't know the answer to. And so really, in all the different publications I've read and things, there's just not really been any problems with that being insecure.
I was saying credit rating. I heard you say credit report. They're not quite the same thing.
So what has happened is we've kind of have an evolution of things. So we have credit reports. We have three different credit bureaus, and they are competing companies. So they don't necessarily have the same information about you. Each report is generated independently of each other. At annualcreditreport.com, you're entitled to get one free credit report from each of the three bureaus once a year. So a total of three reports. Those reports are really where all your data is pulled in, and it's quite comprehensive, lots and lots of data about people. Then different companies can use that credit report to generate different kinds of credit scores. And the credit score that I think most people think of when they hear the word credit score is the one generated by FICO.
I'm checking Wikipedia. There's FICO, there's Vantage, and there's CE. Are those the three companies?
Well, no. The three companies that do the credit bureaus and the credit reports are TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax.
Okay.
And then lots of companies, those are three big ones that you just mentioned, do credit scores. Even companies that are large, like lending companies, can do their own credit scores within their business, and they might not sell them to anybody else or anything. They just do it for their business.
But these three companies do the reports.
The data collection is done by those three companies that I mentioned.
So a score is sort of an interpretation of the report.
The score, exactly. They take all this data and they put it through their own customized formula, mathematical formula, in order to come up with one number that describes this person that they're running the score for. And one of the things that's kind of a myth is that people think there's one number out there that describes everybody and it's all based on the same formula, and that's not true. Even if you go to a particular company, they will have different formulas depending on the company they're generating underwriting it for. So one lending company, one bank could have different criteria than an auto company might have, and that score would be generated a little differently. If you think about it, the credit history of a 25-year-old is going to be very different than a credit history of a 65-year-old. And so they need different formulas to come up with something that's kind of equitable given that different age difference.
And so if I'm asking you a question like how do you maintain a good credit report or a good credit score especially, there must be some basic rules of thumb, but with these specialized scores, they may be looking at different things that could count for you or against you, depending.
That's true. And we can't, you know, control all of that. What I really suggest is that people not worry so much about the score, but take a look at your credit report, because that's the one you can get for free. The others you have to pay for, the scores you pay for. But the report, you want to make sure that the information in each of the three reports is accurate about you. That's the first concern, because a lot of times there's mistakes in them, and there's no reason to be penalized for something that's a mistake in the reporting system. So first you want to check them, make sure it's all accurate. Then if you find that there's some problems in your report, like, for example, it shows that you haven't been making payments on time, that's something you can take action on. You can choose to really make an effort to get at least that minimum payment in on time. That's the number one thing that everybody can strive to do to improve their credit report and then their ability to get loans and to do business at a low cost.
And I'm wondering here, one thing about a credit score is it's really rating your ability to manage debt.
Correct.
And they're saying, you know, it's not bad to have debt. It's how you handle your debt.
Correct.
What if you have no debt? Does that count against you if you just try to avoid debt whatsoever?
It can, because in the sense that again, think of it from a lender's perspective. You're looking at, when you're trying to make a lending decision about somebody, all you can really go by is past history. So you're looking to see, have they been able to manage their debt appropriately in the past? If there's no past history, then again, you just don't know, right? So there's a risk involved there. So you may end up maybe more difficult to get debt to start with, get a loan.
And I'm wondering about something that we were talking about before we went on the air, and you're working with educating young people about debt, and you're finding that younger people today, say college-age people, have a real aversion to credit cards different from what their parents may have had.
Yes. I think a very interesting phenomena. But when I, you know, even in comparison to 6 years ago, when I would be talking about credit cards with young people, there has been a real change. And so now, you know, what I run into so much is students and young high school students as well saying to me, I really don't need to know about how to choose a credit card because I will never have a credit card.
Their whole lives, they're assuming that's what they're going
that's
to do.
That's what they're saying. Now, whether or not that happens over their whole life, I can't predict exactly. But that's the way they feel today, is that I don't want to go there.
Do you think these are people who have seen either their friends or maybe their own family have problems with credit cards?
I think that is definitely part of it. And I think also in the media, there's just been a lot of coverage about the problems of debt, especially credit card debt. And then, you know, it's really hard to argue that, you know, especially with the way interest rates are on savings accounts right now, exactly why you should be paying credit card debt interest that's in the 20s or 30%.
20 or 30% when your savings account is paying something like maybe 1.2 or something.
Exactly. So they're not stupid. Think about this.
What's your own advice as far as having credit cards and first having them and then using them?
Well, I think that people need to look at their own money management behaviors. I think people know themselves pretty well, and they know whether a credit card is a good financial tool for them or not. I think all kinds of loans, including credit cards, are financial tools. They are things that we can use to help us meet our personal goals. But when is the right time to have that, and how much and what do you want, is something that I think people need to set those limits for themselves, and don't let lenders set those limits for you. So just because you might get a credit card that has, you know, X amount of credit line limit on it, Doesn't mean that that's right for you. Think about it. Set the limit that you want. If it's higher than you want, call the credit card company and ask them to lower it. Same thing if you're going out to take out a home loan. You decide how much loan you want to take out, and don't accept more.
And we always know the danger of credit cards is spending money that you don't have because of the interest rates that accrue.
Correct.
But, of course, that's what credit cards allow you to do.
Right.
And there's and the question there is there a time when that is actually the best course of action? I can see it, say an emergency auto repair might be one situation.
That's an excellent example. You're on the road and something happens and you need to get that vehicle fixed so you can continue on. There's all kinds of situations where we can take advantage of opportunities. They may be great sales that we want to take advantage of. We know that we're going to have a plan how we're going to pay that off, you know, the next month or so. People's income doesn't always flow equally month to month. Sometimes people need a way to kind of smooth that out, and credit can help us do that.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking with Kathy Sweetler, a consumer economics educator with the U of I Extension. You can call with your questions about personal finance for Kathy at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. And you can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. And you can send in questions to us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus 580. And I'm wondering, we were talking about credit reports and credit scores, and how does a person's age factor into that as to what sort of as to what may show up on your report? If you're 25 compared to 55 compared to 75, are the credit rating agencies paying attention to that?
Well, I think they do take that into account, and it's in the formulas to kind of compensate for that. Because, as I said earlier, one of the things that matters in your credit report is, are you making your payments on time? They also do look at how long you've had credit, and your credit history and the length of time of it is definitely a factor in those formulas. And that's where they have to kind of compensate their formulas for different ages. They also look at whether or not people are maxing out their credit. So that's something to think about, too, is that the credit scores tend to get negatively affected if somebody's really right at their maximum allowed amount on their credit cards on a regular basis. So that's just another variable to think about, is if you're always right at that max, you really want to think about trying to pay that down some and not always having it maxed out.
Is paying off your cards on a regular basis usually good as far as the rating agencies are concerned?
So it's kind of interesting. The credit reports are kind of black and white, and so there's not a lot of gray in them. So people sometimes say to me, like, well, I was just a couple days late. Does that really count? Yes, that really counts. You're late or you're not late. They don't care about how late you are. They don't like to see them maxed out, but they're not really that concerned that you're paying them all the way off either. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of things that now, there's lots of good reasons from a personal finance point of view to pay them off. And sometimes that's where we kind of have to think, too, is not just what is our credit score doing, but what works for us and what do we need to do over our lifetime. Carrying a revolving balance for a lifetime is a big deal.
Okay. I'm going to go to a caller, Pat from Champaign on line 4. You're on the air, and I understand you had a question about getting mistakes removed from your credit report.
Yes. Yes, I'm fairly along in years, and I haven't seen too many of my reports, but it just seems like they go on for pages and pages, and they have accounts on there that didn't necessarily close, but opened in another state or whatever, a department store. Do these things count? Can you have your report cleaned up with someone so that it reflects what is actually going on?
Good morning, Pat. So the accounts that you see in other states that you mentioned, are these accounts you recognize that you might have opened, you know, in another, when you live somewhere different?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You know, I had a family in the department stores in Rochester, New York. I opened accounts there. I haven't used them in years, but I don't think I formally closed them. But it just seems like all this stuff is, you know, is in there. And at what point does it do they take it off your report?
Well, actually, if that's still an open line of credit, then they won't take it off your report because it is an open line of credit. And one of the things that creditors want, lenders want to know is how much credit do you have out there that you could just, you know, go out and use tomorrow, even if you aren't really, you know, you're probably not going to, but still the lenders, that's a question they ask. And so every time you have a credit card account or a line of credit, a home equity loan, any of those things, that's potential credit that you could use tomorrow.
Okay.
And so the other problem with having those credit cards open that we're really not keeping track of, and I know a lot of us, all of us probably have that going on, is that you're more at a risk for identity theft with those because, again, you're not really keeping track of them. Mm-hmm. So it may be a really good thing to just take a look at those and slowly start working through closing those lines of credit that you don't want and don't need, in the sense that it'll just kind of clean up your financial history.
All right. Is there someone that can help you with that, or do you have to go through line by line and call, you know, some department store back in the city you used to live in? I mean, do you have to do that line by line?
You know, even if you did hire a company and it would be a charge to do it, you would still have to provide all that information to them. So I would really...
I mean, if it's on my credit report now, it's there.
Right.
So and if it's on there, does that mean it's open?
Yes. That would be my guess. I mean, you know, there are mistakes on credit reports. It's possible you're going to call one and they'll say, no, we did close that. Shouldn't be on your report. Then you can get a statement and send that to that credit bureau and say, this has been closed. Please take it off my report.
Okay.
But typically it means that it's open.
Mm-hmm.
I need to throw out one more caveat for people that are listening, is that one other piece in your credit score is that piece I mentioned before with how long have you had credit. That's sort of a positive, the longer you've had credit.
Mm-hmm.
When you cancel or close accounts you've had for a long time, you will see a temporary dip in your credit score. So we don't recommend that people do that like within a few months of, like, if you're going to go out and get a new home mortgage or take out a large loan, because you could see a dip.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long term, as a kind of more of you're looking at your own personal finance and how you want to manage your money, it's probably a good idea to have control of these open lines, and you'd want to get those closed mm-hmm. if you don't plan to use them.
I mean, I'm 75 years old, so you can look at my history where I've lived and, you know, used credit for clothing for kids and so on. So there's probably a lot on there. So it's up to me to sit down piece by piece and take care of it.
Yeah, you just might, you know, once a week, grab one, get rid of it. You know, to be honest, I agree with you. It's kind of a mess after a lifetime. I'm kind of amazed how many different accounts I have over the history.
But also, Kathy, you make it sound like it's not an urgent thing that you have to do right now this minute.
No, there's no urgency to it. It's just one of those things. Those are likely open lines of credit.
So that won't help your credit score.
It doesn't help your credit score to have that many. If you have a lot open.
If you get rid of them, does it help?
It's one of those balancing questions of, you know, I've talked to people who said, well, I went to apply for a loan and I couldn't get any more loan. I couldn't get the loan. And they told me it was because I had too much open credit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking to apply for a loan, it could be a negative because you've got these open lines.
Too much open credit.
Yes.
When does a level of open credit become bad?
Well, it depends on your income level, right? So what they're concerned about is if they give you another loan, could you pay off all these loans? And it does go into the score because theoretically you could go on a shopping spree tomorrow and fill up every one of those credit cards.
So this is not like a Bill Gates problem, I take it.
Probably not.
Well, I'm thinking of, too, if I went to the other city and I said, oh, I've got my Lord & Taylor card.
Right.
And if I tried to use it, they would be a hold up because they'd say, oh, you know, you haven't used this in 5 years. Is there a point where the stores say, this person's not going to come in here and buy anything anymore. Let's take them off. You have to do this yourself.
Well, there it again, and this is really just a company by company decision. I know that in the last few years, several of my credit cards that had been open for quite a while and I hadn't cleaned up, I got notices that they were just going to be closed because I hadn't used them for so long. I think companies were kind of cleaning things up and closing out accounts that hadn't been used. But it's really a company by company decision, and they could stay open for a really long time, and there would be no problem with you walking in and using one 10, 15 years later.
Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of at one time I had a Target, and I stopped using it, and I just cut the card up. But I could probably go in there, and if I had the card, I could go in there and continue to get credit from Target, which is, you know, a national national chain. So I get it.
I guess the other question really is, are you taking out loans now? Do you, you know, what else is the credit report really affecting your life?
Well, I just bought a car.
Okay, so it did.
And I think I squeaked by on that probably, but I you know, I don't know why. But as you say, you know, I'm on Social Security now, so my income is, and my husband's deceased, so my income is a lot less than it was then. So I can see where they'd look at that and say, how could she possibly?
Right. So that's where the concern is.
Okay, yeah. I thank you. That was good information.
Great question. Thank you.
Pat, thank you very much for calling. And we're going to take a short break right now. We are talking about credit cards, credit reports, credit ratings, and we'll be interested in hearing your experiences and questions with them. We have a question coming up on someone trying to help their son establish a good credit rating, and we'll talk about that after the break on Focus on WILL.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. First things out the way, thank you for coming. Those of you who were curious and those who were maybe escorted here.
That's Bobby Cannavale as gangster Gip Rossetti on HBO's Boardwalk Empire. Season 3 is coming out on DVD. Cannavale is also co-starring in Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine. An interview with Cannavale on the next Fresh Air.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Friends of WILL and from Wesley Church and Wesley Foundation, celebrating 100 years in campus ministry on the corner of Goodwin and Green. Services Sunday at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. Details at wesleyui.org.
We're back on Focus, talking about personal finance. Right now, talking about credit with Kathy Sweetler, educator with the University of Illinois Extension. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk, WILL-talk at illinois.edu. We have an email from Alan, and his question is, how can I help my 23-year-old son establish a good credit rating? He was recently turned down for a card at a local store. Could I put him on one of my cards? Unbeknownst to him, he would not be using it as a way to establish credit.
Okay, that's an excellent question, Alan. So it has been very hard for young people to get credit cards right now because of the tightening of the credit market.
So not only are they suspicious of them, they can't get them anyway?
That's pretty much true, yeah. it's hard for everybody to get credit right now. Things are very different than they were 10, 15 years ago in that sense. But especially young people, and especially if they don't have a good paying job. Putting them on your card as an authorized user, I'm not quite, to be sure, 100% sure that that's going to help their credit report. There's a couple of different choices that you have that will definitely help their credit report. One, and this one I do with caveats, is that you could co-sign with them on a credit card. Mm-hmm. The advantage is that it will help build their credit report in a positive way if that card is used in a positive manner and the payments are made timely. The disadvantage is that you're both equally responsible for that debt, 100%. And if the credit card is not used in a responsible manner, it will affect both of your credit reports. That's something to think very seriously about because it could hurt your credit report and credit score. Another way that I suggest that people explore is there are what's called secured credit cards. And what a secured credit card is that you work with a financial institution that offers a secured credit card. And the, either you put a certain amount of money into like a money market fund that they hold. And then let's say you put $500 in there and you will earn some interest on it. Then that company would issue a credit card to your son in the same amount, so $500 credit limit. Then they can practice using that credit card, you know, charge some things, pay it off on time, and build up their credit history without your co-signature or you being, you know, directly financially involved. Sometimes parents choose to put that $500 up for them with the understanding between the child and the parent that that's my money. I get it back in 2 years when you've got yourself established. That's worked well for myself with my sons, and they've been able to, you know, up their credit limit as over time as they've proven that they can use that credit card.
It comes to mind when parents are working with their recently grown children that this is the time where the kids are coming under financial responsibilities they've never had before. And there are things that they just really may have no idea what's in store.
That's right. And, you know, you can talk a lot, and has some impact depending on your particular children or not. But practice, I think, is one of the best ways. Sometimes they will make some mistakes and they'll learn by those mistakes. And I guess, you know, again, in each family, they have to work out what works best for the different individuals. But I felt that I wanted their mistakes on credit to affect their report, not mine. And so we luckily haven't had a lot of mistakes. I'm not trying to say we have. But, you know, I think the secured credit card is just a really nice way for them to kind of work their way into that, developing a credit history.
You know, in a larger sense, what should parents be telling their kids to the degree that their kids are going to listen when they're starting to say if they're going off to college and living away from home on their own, or even starting to earn their own living and starting to have to manage their own household finances?
I think one of the things as a parent to keep in mind is that things that we think that they sort of might have just picked up because they lived in your household sometimes haven't been picked up. And so you may want to sit down and really make a point of having a conversation about spending and about setting up a budget, and even talking about like who is responsible for which expenses. Sometimes I think it's good to just sort of really lay out all the expenses that a young person has, everything from that cell phone charge to auto insurance to rent and food and entertainment and clothing. And not that you're necessarily going to expect that they're going to pay for all those, but I think they need to be aware that these are real living expenses. And even if you as the parent are paying for them, at some point you do expect them to pay for them. And then when they see that all laid out, my experience has been they're usually kind of surprised. And then you can talk about, okay, so how are we paying for these in the next few years? What's the plan? You know, as a freshman, what are you going to be expected to pay for in college? Will that change as you move from being a freshman to being a senior? And by the time you graduate, what are we planning to do? Now, life changes and things happen. It doesn't always follow that plan exactly. But I think having that expectation of what am I responsible for now? How is this going to be paid for? Is it going to be by me working or by loans, or, you know, is there other sources of income? And then that grand plan of financial independence.
Well, we have a few questions which have been lining up about credit cards. One comes in from a caller. If you are widowed, does it matter whether you notify the company of your status as a widow? My late husband supported me. His name is still on the cards. I have money to pay my bills, but I don't work. Will my status as unemployed or his death affect my credit?
Okay, say that one more time. Make sure I got all those variables.
Well, this is a person. This is a person who I guess had credit cards in common with her husband, and her husband's name was on the cards. The husband has passed away now. I have money to pay my bills, she writes, but she doesn't work, and of course the late husband's name is on is on the credit cards. What needs to be done here in order for her to establish her own credit?
I think that, you know, technically legally, you really do need to notify them that that there's been a change in status and that your husband has passed away. How that will affect your credit report really depends so much on, you know, income levels and the fact that you don't have to be supporting two people anymore. There's only one person being supported. So there's a balancing effect there that would depend on the situation. But I think this would be an opportunity where you would start to, you know, you do have your own credit history already, just like your husband had his own credit history. We don't, even if our incomes are mingled and our debts are mingled, we have our own credit histories. So I don't see that changing out all that much for you.
Okay. Here's another question about a different credit card problem. What happens if your parents had put you on their credit card? And you were talking about how this is doing it to perhaps help a young person's credit. But what if they did that and then got divorced and didn't take you off it? How do you rebuild your credit if your parents ruined yours?
Unfortunately, this is a relatively common occurrence where when parents have some difficulties financially, they use their child's identity to get credit, whether it's through a credit card or utilities or a loan. This is really a legal issue. You can notify the credit card companies that this was not your debt, that especially if you were a minor when this happened, then you clearly couldn't have taken out this debt because they can't give loans to minors. And so my suggestion would be that you notify the company that it's not your debt, try to get your name off of it. And if that doesn't work, then you really need to consult with a lawyer.
It does get a little complicated there.
It's very complicated. It's very hard for young people. It's one of the reasons that I encourage even young people who tell me, well, I don't have a credit history because I haven't had anything going on, to still check their credit reports, make sure they're accurate, that any debt that does show up is theirs.
Okay. When does a person's credit report begin? I don't know. At one point, I started having a credit history. When did the credit rating agencies discover me, and how did they do that?
Well, any time that a company that they work with in conjunction reports information. So landlords from large companies report information. Cell phone companies often report information. Utility companies can report information. Obviously, credit card companies and lenders, whether they're auto loans or things, can report information. All of those can be information that starts off your credit history.
They just the larger ones just normally report to the three.
That's correct. That's correct. If you're renting from somebody where they just have, you know, one duplex and they probably, you know, and that's a private landlord, they're probably not reporting.
Okay. So then all of a sudden there you are with even if you weren't aware of it, you have a credit history and a credit report.
That's right. And one of the other reasons to check your credit history, if you remember at annualcreditreport.com, is to check for identity theft. This is really one of our best financial tools for identifying whether somebody is using our identity illegally. And it might be a family member, but it might very well be somebody that is not in any way connected with you but has gotten your information. And that's why we want to check our reports every year to make sure that somebody isn't opening up credit card accounts or doing business in your name that isn't you.
Okay. We are talking about credit cards, credit reports, your credit reputation on Focus today with Kathy Sweetler with the U of I Extension. And does the extension have particular materials on their websites about credit, and how do you get to it?
Well, we definitely do. University of Illinois Extension has a website with lots of excellent information in it. One thing that's directly related to today's conversation is a series, a webpage all called Credit Card Smarts. And I think really the easiest way to find it is to use a search engine and just put in Credit Card Smarts, University of Illinois, and it should pop up for you.
There it is, yes. Credit Card Smarts. It is at web.extension.illinois.edu/creditcardsmarts. And this is really just basic, unadorned information.
this is unbiased, research-based information. And so what it allows, there's different pieces to it. It talks about when, how can I figure out if I have too much credit? How can I repair my credit history? What are the things that I want to look for if I'm shopping for a credit card? So lots of good basic information there.
We still have time for your questions about credit and other personal finance questions as well at 1-800-222-9455. Or you can, and that number again, 1-800-222-WYLL. Email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. On line one, we have Tony in Champaign, who has some things, I guess, some adventures with your own credit report.
Yeah, my wife and I, I'm in my 60s. My wife and I have very good credit. We were involved in identity theft last year. Somebody tried to use our credit to establish a business account in a different state.
They did this unbeknownst to you?
Yeah, it was quite unbeknownst, and then we found out, and then we had to file a police report and all that. Anyway, that was all taken care of, and that part's fine. But the part that was the most difficult and totally unreasonable and not reflected at all in your comments so far, I mean the guest comments so far, is how impossible it is to contact the credit bureaus. You can't get them by phone. When you have to fill out a and mind you, we have a very good credit report, and we only needed to try to excise that we had had any thing to do with that activity in that other state, because it showed up in our report as our making applications and such, and it didn't really affect our report at all. But we wanted that out of there. And so we tried to contact the credit bureau, and only one of the credit bureaus had that information. And so we only focused on the one credit bureau. And in the end, we finally got to this thing where you had to fill out like a form and send in all this sort of stuff. We had like a quarter inch thick envelope that we mailed off to a post office box in Texas. We did that, and they said that we had to do it within a certain time period. Okay, fine. At the very end of that time period, the letter came back saying that there was no such addressee, and I went back to the website thinking, oh, heck, I must have put in the wrong address. I found the page that gave the address that you were supposed to send this information to, and I was exactly right on my envelope. So I just want to tell, especially that first lady that called, that if you're trying to correct your report, good luck. And that's all I really wanted to say. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It does sound like there's a challenge there. Now, do you have any firsthand experience of having to correct something on a report? And what's your experience been, Kathy?
I have had to correct things on my report more than once. And I have to say that luckily I had a lot better experience in the sense that I was able to send documentation and have it corrected. And I'm not sure we'd call it a timely mode, but within the law in terms of how much time that the credit bureaus have to respond. It's one reason why I tell people check your report a few months before you want to take out a loan. But I do know that people have difficulties with it. And you're right to do, you have to do it in writing. You want to document everything you send. You want to keep track of dates and conversations that you might, if you do get through. I'm very sorry to hear that you had so much problems with it. We don't. It's the best we have as a system for correcting it.
There are three different private companies that are doing these credit ratings, and so your experience with one may be different from another.
That's absolutely correct. And also, one of the problems, you just need to make sure you're really on the right websites, which you probably were. They are notorious at changing addresses, and then you have to make sure you've got that up-to-date information.
Okay. And is it a rule of thumb that if you're trying to get records changed, they're going to want a document or a copy of a document, and that you'll have to mail it, say faxing it or something like that isn't going to do it?
I don't know if you can fax it these days or not, but I just know that they're not going to really do much for you over the phone.
Okay. You can't say, though, no, I'm not 85 years old. I'm really 58. And they'll want to see the birth certificate.
They want to see the documentation.
Okay. I'm wondering, you know, another question that comes by at this time of year, with a lot of people going off to school and going off to college, and the financial burden that comes along with just getting started, even just the price of textbooks right now frightens me to death. And it was scary enough when I was in college, but those sort of things loom large now. What sort of advice do you have for a household that's dealing with these extra expenses as to just how to make it work for as little money as possible?
Well, I think that, again, just that open communication about expectations. Sometimes there's a cost that the young person thinks sounds very reasonable because they just don't have any experience with it. And from somebody who has more experience as a parent, you may be very startled by the expense. And so that kind of communication can help. That just happened when we found out that there was a parking fee for the apartment my son rented, and I had no idea there was a parking fee involved. And he was like, well, aren't there always parking fees? I'm like, no. So, I mean, he just didn't know, right? So it was one of those things. The other thing that I think all of us fall into, but young people just as much, is small amounts add up. And so while it may not seem like that big of a deal if you stop off twice a day to pick up a beverage of your choice somewhere in between classes, but if you add it up over the whole semester, it can be a real addition to your budget. Parking meters, those types of things that, again, you could take the bus for free, but it doesn't seem like that much to feed the meter. But if you add it up, it can add up to thousands of dollars each year. So those are another thing that we can just help our young adults to kind of recognize what that cost is.
And that can be a matter when you say the amenities that you're choosing for an apartment, up to depending on the size of the campus and how things are located, if you're going to have a car, and where you're going to park the car.
Where you're going to park that car
is actually a question here at the University of Illinois.
That's right. And, you know, do you park it here all year, or do you just bring it down to move in and then take it back up? Or, you know, these are all choices that we have to make, and it depends on our individual values and what's important to us. But really examining those different expenses and thinking about their impact, not just that semester, but if you multiply it by, you know, 8 or 10 semesters, what does that mean at the end of the time in terms of how much are you going to have to pay back in student loans? And is it worth it to you? Do you really want to do that? Or do you want to look at some other choices?
Do the student loans factor in a person's credit report?
The student loans do not, if it's to the student.
They don't factor in the student's credit report?
Right. So if the student is taking out the loan from the federal government, then they're not looking at credit history. But if you go out to take out a private loan, if you take a private loan, then the credit history may be a factor. And if the parents want to take a loan, a parent loan for the student, it will be a factor.
That's that's an interesting situation there in that, That government student loan can be with the student. He or she may be paying it off for years. That can be a real factor in their financial history, but the credit report people may not know about it?
Well, they may. Let's say I'm a college student. I apply for a student loan. That's the federal government doesn't look at my credit history. Most of the 18-year-olds don't have a lot of credit history. and so I can get that loan without that being a factor. But paying back that student loan, that does impact their credit report going forward.
Okay.
And so, in fact, while most negative information on our credit report goes away after 7 years, and if you have a bankruptcy, that will leave your credit report after 10 years, defaulting on student loan never goes away.
That is something people need to remember then. Line one, Jan from Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Well, good morning. It's good to listen to your talking. But I had that question about a letter I received from, well, it was from TransUnion and Experian, and it says something like, we are contacting you because we received a request for your free annual credit report, and it appears to have been submitted. The request has been submitted by a third party, and both of these letters say just about the same thing, and I did not request my report, so what do you make of that?
Have you signed up for any kind of a credit score monitoring service or anything like that with one of your credit cards? Sometimes they're kind of add-ons.
No, I haven't changed anything for a long, long, long time.
That nailed it in July
11th. It says it was issued at July 11th, and definitely nothing was changing for me. I mean, I did travel.
And you have two separate letters, one from TransUnion and one from Experian, both saying that?
Yes.
Do they identify the third party?
No. They say if they want to assure that it is me and I should send them something, and if I don't want my report, then no further action is needed.
Yes. That is odd. That seems like it raises red flags of warning for me. If you didn't, the annual credit report that's free is for your use. Sometimes if you're working with a financial planner or a credit service that's helping you monitor your credit or something like that, they might ask you to fill out a form where they could then request that information for you. But if you haven't done that, then I don't understand why you're getting that letter. I would not sign it and return it. And if I were you, I would check your annual credit your credit report at annualcreditreport.com and make sure there is no other activity going on that you don't recognize.
Yeah, I think I will. I haven't done that yet, but I'm getting a little bit of free time now so I can sit down and do it online. I think that your advice about doing it online is a good bit of advice.
Yeah, okay. I would check it out.
Okay, thanks.
Sure thing.
Thank you very much, Jan, and that pretty much wraps it up for this personal finance edition of Focus Today. Kathy Sweetler, I want to thank you very much for being on the program with us. Hope to have Kevin Waspy with us the next time around. He wasn't able to be with us. Go to our website at will.illinois.edu/focus, and you'll find a link to annualcreditreport.com, so you can look up your own credit report. And you'll also find a link to the U of I Extension's Credit Card Smarts page with lots of good, solid, clear, basic information about the wise use of credit cards. Again, Kathy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
And we welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon, Mike Pritchett, our technical director. Monday on Focus, we'll hear my interview with novelist Gene Thompson, whose latest novel, The Humanity Project, takes a look at the very human characters mixed up in an ill-fated effort to solve the human race's big problems. That's on Monday's show. Focus is live each weekday morning at 10, a replay at 8 p.m. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WYLL.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets, where soybeans continue to rally after blowing through its 150-day moving averages yesterday. This morning, soybeans have made an assault on its 200-day moving average, and in fact have at one point today popped above it, but have since settled back slightly. Soybeans battling that 200-day moving average, as well as a 12.61.8 Fibonacci retracement level. At the 12.68 level, that represents the move from the June highs down to the August lows. Many of our analysts on for WILLAG.org and AM580 believe that can we clear that with some force either today or early next week, that we might make an assault at the $13 level, maybe all the way up to $13.33 in the November basis contract. Let's go ahead and look at particulars. We'll begin with September soybeans, which are 12.94 up 5 3/4, and November at 12.68 up 2 1/2. In the products, September soybean meal, 4.10.20 up 40, and September soybean oil at 43.40 up 28. September corn at 4.69 1/2 is down 12 today. December 12.62 1/4 down 10. Soft red December wheat at 6.42 down 7 1/2, and hard red December wheat at 7.01 down 5 1/4. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.
From WHY.